Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah, right!
Welcome to this edition of Rebel Rise Live. I'm David Johnson, along with your co-host, Dave Bevan. Michael Quirk expected to join us a little bit later on in today's broadcast. Well, today is Tuesday, March 1st, and in political circles, Dave, it's known as Super Tuesday. A lot of states going to the poll today in the presidential primaries. Tomorrow could kind of be called Super Wednesday for Ole Miss. A lot of stuff going on with the Ole Miss athletics program tomorrow, starting with the Ole Miss men's basketball team hosting Mississippi State in the last regular season game inside the pavilion. The Memphis Tigers visiting Swayze Field tomorrow to play the 13th-ranked Ole Miss baseball team. The Ole Miss women's basketball team will be in action out in Jacksonville, Florida tomorrow night, the first-round SEC tournament game. They'll play Vanderbilt. Ole Miss, a 14 seed. That's never good in a 14-team conference, Dave. The Ole Miss women, a 14 seed, playing 11th-seeded Vanderbilt. That game tomorrow at 12:30 Central Time. It'll be televised on the SEC Network if you want to watch Coach Matt Insull's crew play Vanderbilt in a first-round SEC tournament game. And then, perhaps the thing that's got everybody excited the most, the Ole Miss Rebel football team will get spring practice underway tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock. This, mind you, is not open to the media. Hugh Freeze electing to have his spring press conference on Thursday at 1 o'clock, we'll be inside the Manning Center bringing you all of that. And then the media gets their first viewing of this Ole Miss football team on Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. The Rebels' first day in pads will be Saturday morning, I'm told. So that's the first day that they'll strike it up and hit one another. That practice closed to the media as well. But the first day we'll get to see this group in pads will be that following Monday. And we're excited about that. Eight new early enrollees going to be mixing it up for the first time. That's going to be an exciting thing, no doubt about it. Dave, it's just a lot of things happening this time of the year surrounding Ole Miss athletics.
Absolutely, Dave. You got a lot of sporting events combined with, you know, spring football just right around the corner, and it's going to be an exciting week, a packed full week of coverage on Rebels 247, and Thursday it will be exciting for the media to get that first chance to look at the Ole Miss football team in their officially second day of practice. And you know, as you mentioned, the eight early enrollees, that will be, you know, exciting to watch. The most early enrollees, out of high school coming in for Ole Miss in the history of the program. So it will be interesting to watch that group and see where they fit in and through the course of spring. And then you've got an Ole Miss baseball team, the 13th-ranked Diamond Rebels nationally, matching up against Memphis in Oxford on Wednesday. So baseball, a lot of excitement around the atmospheres. Ole Miss just this past weekend knocked off the number two team in the country in Louisville.
Rebels taking two out of three from the Louisville Cardinals over the weekend, and they did jump up in all the major polls. Their highest ranking coming from Baseball America at number 13 in the country. And, they won that midweek game in dramatic fashion last week against Arkansas State, a walk-off hit in the bottom of the ninth inning. And Those midweek games, very important. And you know, they loom large when you get down towards the end of the year and you're talking about who's going to host NCAA tournament action. And, you know, those things can come back to haunt you. You know, it may seem like they're not very important, but even the momentum of Ole Miss being able to beat Arkansas State in the bottom of the ninth last weekend and to carry some of that into the weekend against previously second-ranked Louisville, I think pays dividends. So this game with Memphis tomorrow night, big for Ole Miss, as they'll leave Swayze after that game and head out to Coastal Carolina for a weekend round-robin tournament that features Ball State, Cincinnati, and a Coastal Carolina team that's currently ranked 19th in the nation. Now, tomorrow night, all the eyes will be focused on Ole Miss hosting arch rival Mississippi State in the Pavilion. That is an early tip-off. It's a 6 o'clock Central Time tip-off. As far as television goes, it will be on the SEC Network. Understand there's only standing room only tickets remaining for this game, very few of them, so expecting a sellout crowd at the Pavilion. Ole Miss 18-11, 8-8 inside the SEC, Mississippi State 13-15, 6-10 in the SEC. And, you know, not to toot the Bulldogs' horns, but you can start to see the work Ben Howland is doing at Mississippi State. This is a much better Mississippi State team than even the one that beat Ole Miss, a very beat-up and injured Ole Miss team in Starkville earlier in the year. So big ball game set for tomorrow night at the Pavilion. What's it mean for Ole Miss? Well, I think the number one factor is pride. You do not want your arch rival to come into Oxford and beat you on your home court. You know, the second factor, you know, is you'd like to get hot before heading into the SEC tournament in Nashville, which is only days away now. And you don't want to limp into that. You'd like to go in hot. Ole Miss with a chance to beat Mississippi State at home, and then go to Tennessee and steal one on the weekend, and then maybe ride into Nashville with 20 victories, being 20-11, 10-8 in the SEC, and a little wind beneath their wings, because the only way these Rebels are going to get into the NCAA tournament, in my opinion, is if they win the SEC tournament. I think that's the only ticket they have left to the big dance. It's probably an improbable ticket, to say the least, with the way this team plays up and down quite a bit. It would be a stretch to think they can roll into Nashville and knock off the likes of the Kentucky Wildcats and the Florida Gators and whoever else they would have to get past to be able to cut down the nets in Nashville on that Sunday. But why not go in with a little momentum, a little wind against your back? A two-game win streak would certainly be nice. And just see what happens. And nevertheless, they'll have postseason basketball. You certainly have to believe that Ole Miss would be in line to not only get an NIT berth, but to also host maybe a couple of rounds of the National Invitational Tournament, which, as Michael Quirk pointed out yesterday on the podcast, would certainly be to Ole Miss's advantage to be able to showcase the Pavilion in a national Invitational tournament game on national television. Folks will be watching, and you have to look at it as a program builder. Certainly not the way you wanted the season to go, but that's where you're at this point, Dave.
You're right, and as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, David, you know, the women's basketball team placing that number 14th seed in the women's SEC tournament. You know, Ole Miss, you know, for them to, you know, end a regular season strong is important to, you know, possibly have a better seeding of what they could be projected. And, you know, in order, you know, for Ole Miss, like you mentioned, the possibility of making an NCAA tournament berth, I'm with you on that. I believe, you know, in my opinion, if they would also need to, you know, win the SEC tournament outright. In order for Ole Miss to do that, you know, they've got to build some kind of consistency, and that they would only be able to do that in the SEC tournament, where they would have to just be on a run. And unfortunately, that's not what we've seen out of this basketball team yet this season. Consistent wins, And in order for Ole Miss to do that, you know, they definitely have to have Stephon Moody going strong, coming in into the tournament strong, which he's done that. He's been consistent this year. He's the leading SEC scorer, averaging 22.8 points per game, and ranked ninth nationally. He's currently, you know, up for the bid as a finalist for the Howell Trophy, the reigning winner of the Howell Trophy from last year. So, Michael Court, you're on the show now. Welcome to the show. What are your thoughts on this Ole Miss basketball team, you know, and their postseason hopes?
Yeah, sorry I'm a little late. I had a little fire I had to put out in the house. I had a candle lit, and all of a sudden
I
heard
Michael, wait a minute. Yesterday you got attacked by a lion on the air, and today the house is burning down. What's going on over there at your place, man?
You know, it's like a carnival inside here, but I like to live life on the dangerous side. And this one I didn't even know was able to happen. I had a candle lit in the house, and all of a sudden I heard some glass breaking, and the candle was in the middle of the table, and all of a sudden there's just glass coming out from the bottom, big shards. I guess there's just a little mini explosion inside the candle, so that was alarming. So I had to get that all taken care of.
Well, thank goodness you're okay. That's the number one thing. And secondly, don't let your insurance carrier find out about how you're living life there, Court, because you're kind of scaring us a little bit with this living on the edge that you're doing there. Dave and I are family guys, and you know, we're not used to this wild lifestyle of this new generation.
Michael, when you tell me that, my premiums are going to go up.
I bet they are. Well, as Dave segued to you about this Ole Miss basketball team, he asked you about the postseason chances, and I think we've covered that ad nauseum. That's something Andy Kennedy likes to say. I've heard him use that term before. That, you know, likely the only way they're getting in the dance, barring some kind of miraculous thing, like being attacked by a lion in your living room, is that they're going to have to win the SEC tournament. At Powell on, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no chance of an at-large at this point. They're going to have to run the table. Winning on senior night will just be, you know, that's the thing about pride. That's the thing about in-state rivalry. And also you want to send guys who have given a lot to the program, like a Stephon Moody in his just 2 years with the program, and Tomas Gill only 1 year, but Newby and Perez in their 4 years. You want to send them out on a high note at home and, of course, close out the regular season at the Pavilion on a high note. And then when it goes to Tennessee, it's just all about positioning. It's so close in that middle tier range in the SEC that you want to get, you know, as good of a seed as possible in that SEC tournament. And they're going to need to go out and win four games and to have any chance of getting into the tournament. But there's been a lot of talk this year and in years past about Andy Kennedy's not scheduling a strong enough out of conference, which those who say that are right on one end of the coin, and that the out of conference has not been a tough slate by any means. Has been relatively weak year in and year out, but where they're wrong is thinking that that's Kennedy's fault or the basketball program's fault. They're trying to do their best to improve that schedule and to get marquee names on there and to have a stronger slate, but there just hasn't been much mutual interest on the other end of teams wanting to schedule Ole Miss, thinking that they're going to get anything out of it, wanting to play in the Tad Pad, and also, you know, teams saying, hey, is Ole Miss really that big of a basketball draw if we get them to come here? And so getting some exposure, either with a nice run in the SEC tournament or with some home games in primetime on ESPN or ESPN2 for the NIT and getting to see the Pavilion, getting to see Ole Miss's style of play, that could certainly help in the scheduling department, which – you know, Ole Miss, if they're able to get a tougher schedule, win or lose those games in the future, that will help them come tournament time. Because as I said yesterday, you have Florida and Vanderbilt very similar records to Ole Miss, very similar in the conference standings, and Ole Miss even has a head-to-head over Vanderbilt. But Vanderbilt and Florida played much tougher out-of-conference games. And
right.
So that's the difference this time of year. And so if Ole Miss can get some exposure, can sort of make a little bit of noise, and can establish themselves on some sort of median level, that can really help them in the future going forward when we're at this point in March next year in 2018 and things like that down the road.
Well, and they really lost twice earlier in the year when they were playing in this tournament, and they lost, I believe, to George Mason, if I'm not mistaken. And had they defeated George Mason, it would have set them up with a neutral floor game with Oklahoma State that never happened because they didn't advance to the winner's bracket of that tournament. And that cost them a potential quality win right there by not playing George Mason as tough as they needed to. And then you go back to last year, and, you know, you have to ask yourself, you talk about the importance of these non-conference games. And, of course, they do have a victory over Memphis this year that in any other year is usually a pretty darn good non-conference victory. But this year the Tigers suffering so much so that Josh Pastner may be on his way out as their head coach. But last year, a trip out to Oregon and a big win out there with Oregon helped Ole Miss get into the NCAA tournament last year, I believe. Would you think that was a factor, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. When it's not like college football.
There's that lion again.
Got him. He's back again. It's not like college football where a Baylor is Incarnate Word. That's a legitimate out-of-conference game they have coming up, is Incarnate Word. And they're still in the college football discussion. You have to have an incredible run in conference play to, if you have an out-of-conference like that in basketball. You have to be near flawless in conference play to be considered for the tournament, because that is the biggest thing that, you know, the selection committee looks at, is are you playing anybody? Are you trying to play anyone? Or are you just hoping to coast an 11-1, 12-0 record through the out-of-conference and then parlay that into a tournament bid? They really look at who you're going to play, and playing at Oregon a couple of years ago, I believe they had games with Clemson, who's not as marquee as Oregon, but still playing those Power 5 teams or those top mid-major-like teams. I believe they played Creighton a few years ago. Ole Miss really has to start doing more of that. And I think that the Pavilion will help a lot in those regards. And sort of, you know, Ole Miss is steadily, you know, they've shown that they're a 20-win team. But at the end of the year, they're not a high RPI win for anyone because Ole Miss doesn't have a great non-conference. So it's kind of a chicken or the egg. But they certainly need to bolster up that schedule. And that's something that I've been told they're trying to do. They're really trying to do this year, going into next year, and also for that 2017-2018 season as well. And that's something that will start with getting exposure for the Pavilion, getting games that aren't on the SEC network. And so we'll see. I mean, the NIT is sort of dismissed by a lot of people as, I mean, the hanging an NIT banner is nothing to write home about, but it's certainly not an all-for-naught cause of playing in the NIT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, just a word of warning about tomorrow night's game. You know, you expect Ole Miss to win this one. They're at home. It's going to be a sellout crowd watching them and cheering them on. Mississippi State, not noted as being a very good basketball team, but here's the deal. Ole Miss has to bring its A game tomorrow night because Mississippi State has finally started to gel a little bit. And basketball is a game where chemistry means so much. You see a team play in November and they're a totally different team in February. And that's the case with Mississippi State right now. The Bulldogs have won 4 of their last 6 SEC games, and they're coming off a huge win where they knocked off South Carolina by 10 points, 68-58. Last Saturday in Starkville. And, Dave, this won't be an easy task for Ole Miss tomorrow night. Mississippi State would love to have the season sweep of Ole Miss, as they really beat up on a beat up Ole Miss team down in Starkville earlier this season. I think tomorrow night's going to be a war inside the pavilion.
I agree with you, David. It is going to be a war, and you know, I mentioned yesterday on the podcast that if there's anything to salvage out of the season, you know, if you're not going to make the NCAA tournament, you know, don't get swept by your rival. I think that's, you know, a fan's perspective heading into this game. The fans definitely do not like to see a sweep coming from the arch rival of Mississippi State. And, you know, and over the course of nearly a 2-year span up until, you know, the first basketball game earlier this year where Ole Miss was knocked off by Mississippi State. That was the first time in nearly 2 years, you know, Mississippi State had beaten Ole Miss in a men's sport. And just by reading, you know, comments from Ole Miss fans, they took a lot of pride in that 8-0 record that they once held. Now it's 8-1 over the span of two seasons of men's sports, and I definitely wouldn't like to make it 8-2.
Michael, I'm going to ask you to put your Swami hat on here, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but it's an honest question, and I think one that seems to always come up this time of the year. But I think it's fair to say that the ceiling has been defined with Andy Kennedy and the men's basketball program. I don't think that's an unfair statement. I think Andy's body of work, there's enough of it there that you could easily draw a conclusion that, you know, there's a ceiling that that has been reached. And using that as a preface, with a new arena and the expectations that inevitably come when a university sinks money into its program, you know, what are we looking at here in the future for Ole Miss men's basketball? Continuing to win 20 games, hovering around the 20-plus win mark every year, battling for postseason recognition and to get into the NCAA tournament every other year or so. I guess you could be lenient and say that, or compete for an NIT berth. What does the future hold? Is that good enough, I guess, is what I'm asking, to keep Andy Kennedy, who's all-time winningest basketball coach in the history of Ole Miss. He has 192 wins, which is absolutely incredible. That's I'm sitting here reading this now. First 9 years at a school that ranks third in SEC history. I babbled long enough. You got the gist of my question. I mean, how long do you keep bumping your head into the 20-win season realm? Do you do it forever?
Yeah, I think where the Ole Miss basketball program was, it's without a doubt been elevated to a new level with Kennedy. And as far as the ceiling goes, do I see Ole Miss as a perennial Final Four contender? No. But will Ole Miss ever be a perennial Final Four contender? It's a little far-fetched to think that way. So Ole Miss has established itself in football. Ole Miss has established itself in baseball. And they have history in both of those realms. They have a lot to point to there. Ole Miss basketball is it's one of the worst Power Five programs in basketball in its history. I mean, you think about schools that sort of compare to Ole Miss, a school that, you know, hasn't been to a Final Four, hasn't been to an Elite Eight. And if you find me one high school prospect who says he knows who Ansu Cisse is, I'll tell you a kid who's probably related to Ansu Cisse. And there's really nothing you can point to there. And I've heard a lot of Andy Kennedy critics come up with their reasons of why AK should be ousted. And what I'm wondering is who would you want to replace him with? if you think you're pulling a Greg Marshall from Wichita State, or you think you're pulling a Greg McDermott from Creighton or someone like that, then you're just beside yourself, because that's not going to happen. Ole Miss is not going to pull one of those coaches, because they're going to say, hey, you just fired the winningest coach in your program's history because you didn't think he was winning enough. You just ousted a guy who accounts for a third of all your NCAA tournament appearances in your history. I mean, it's you're just not going to find a quality replacement. And when you think the grass is greener and you think, hey, maybe we can find a guy who, instead of winning us 22 games a year and having us in, you know, the NIT more often than the NCAA tournament, if you think instead you have a better chance at finding a 26th win a year coach who's going to have Ole Miss among the blue bloods in the Elite Eight, that's just sort of a fallacy. You're more likely to find a guy who's going to have Ole Miss in the 8, 9, 10 range, sort of what Missouri has with Kim Anderson. That's certainly more likely that you'll find with your next coach than with a Kendi. So, you know, it's an extreme roll of the dice if anyone wanted to get rid of Kennedy and try and find something else, because you look at what options will be wanting to come running to Ole Miss if Ole Miss fires Kennedy, and it's just not going to be a lot of options. And you look at what Kennedy's doing. If you look at some of the out-of-conference wins or out-of-conference losses, if Ole Miss is able to get if Ole Miss is able to get marquee opponents, whether they win or lose those games, that's going to help them get into the NCAA tournament. Well, Andy Kendi can win games. He's a defensive guru who switches up a lot of different schemes, and sometimes he'll do it in game. Sometimes he'll do it possession by possession. And he's really respected by a lot of the coaches in this league, who will unsolicited just talk about, rant and rave about how Andy Kendi coaches a team. And if another coach comes in here, he's going to have just as much of luck at getting, you know, obviously Duke isn't coming to the Pavilion, but getting a Texas at the Pavilion, or getting an NC State at the Pavilion, or a school like that, there's just as good of a chance of Andy Kendi getting that school there as this new coach getting that school there. And so I really think any Ole Miss fans, that Ole Miss boosters that think that, you know, the grass may be greener, they're playing with fire right there. And you've seen it. Andy Kendi's name has been thrown around in speculation for other jobs. And honestly, if I was Kendi, I would be considering other jobs too, when, you know, the sort of job he's done at Ole Miss, and there's such a high contingency of folks that are trying to run him off or really don't appreciate what Kendi's done in Oxford, then I'd be posting my resume on Monster saying head basketball coach looking for new work. So it's sort of interesting to see the dynamics at play there, but I really think that that Kendi does have a ceiling, but that ceiling is much better than what Ole Miss is used to, or what Ole Miss will likely get if they move on from Kennedy.
And it may be Ole Miss's ceiling and not Andy Kennedy's ceiling. You'll have the devil's advocates who will say, well, we're able to do it in football. We're able to turn it around in football. We're certainly doing it in baseball. Why not basketball? And that may just be one of the mysteries of the world, but I agree with everything you said there with your assessment. The boat is floating, generally moves in the correct direction as far as the Ole Miss men's basketball program goes. And I just don't know what the answer is. Until you can recruit better at Ole Miss, I think Andy's doing about as good as he can possibly do with what he has. And he does have a new arena. And again, the reality of it is that there's going to be pressure on him about that new arena to put a team or two on the floor pretty darn soon. That's going to the NCAA tournament, that's going to win 23-24 ball games and make things interesting for Ole Miss basketball fans in the month of March. But it's really not a whole lot more you can ask of Andy Kennedy when you look at it from a historical point, particularly when you juxtapose what he's done versus the history of the Ole Miss basketball program. I want to switch gears real quick, though. We spoke earlier in the podcast, the Ole Miss women going in as a 14 seed in the SEC tournament. They'll be playing Vanderbilt tomorrow, 12:30 Central Time on the SEC Network in a first-round Southeastern Conference tournament game from Jacksonville, Florida. It's been a tough year, Michael, Dave, both of you, for the Ole Miss women's basketball program. And we talk often about the clouds hanging over the Ole Miss football program with potential NCAA sanctions on the horizon. The women's basketball program certainly could have more sanctions, more than what has been self-imposed on them. On the horizon in the future as well. And this program not performing very well this year, 10-19 overall, 2-14 in the SEC, dead last. Michael, what about Matt Insull, who seemed to get off to such a promising start with rebuilding the women's basketball program at Ole Miss, and then all of a sudden this year it's had to have been a nightmare for it.
And sort of the antithesis of SEC men's basketball is SEC women's basketball. I mean, there's no one who's really dominant or the program to really point to this season. Kentucky's, I guess, the cream of the crop, and this is not last year's Kentucky. This is a very beatable Kentucky, and they've proven that. And but you look at the antithesis of the men's side is the women's side. South Carolina is as good as anyone is in the country. UConn has won 60-something straight games, and South Carolina, I believe, had it within single digits as that game was ending in Columbia a few weeks back. But, of course, you have Tennessee is middling right now, but they're still, of course, a very talented team. Mississippi State's very good. Kentucky's very good. Texas A&M, there's a lot of quality women's programs out there that you have a gauntlet that you're going up against when you get into conference play. And Matt Insull, he was dealt a pretty rough hand, but you can see the progress with the team. They had a good non-conference, of course, you know, haven't had the greatest conference season that you can have, but he's very excited about the incoming class that he has coming in. And right now, you just sort of have to ride out, like you said, everything that's going on with the possible sanctions that are forthcoming for women's basketball. But I know it doesn't look the prettiest when you're looking at the numbers in the wins and loss column, but it sort of appears that, you know, the Ole Miss does have the right guy to lead the program, a guy who can win big and has done a great job in recruiting. So you sort of have to ride that wave out, I think.
Well, these the Ole Miss women, they've lost 10 in a row. Their last win was a big one. They beat then number 9 ranked Kentucky back on January 21st, 73-65 in Oxford. Since that time, 10 consecutive losses inside the SEC. And you want to say, you know, well, it looks like the bottom fell out. But honestly, when you look back to, we were talking about the non-conference scheduling, maybe kind of gives you a false positive about this team early in the season because their non-conference wins came against the likes of Division II Christian Brothers, Mississippi Valley State, Stony Brook, Wagner, Western Kentucky, Arkansas Pine Bluff, New Orleans, McNeese State, and Alabama A&M. Certainly none of those programs are SEC caliber, yet that's who they were playing in the pre-conference portion of their schedule. So a tough year for them. They'll do what they can tomorrow in the SEC tournament. And who knows, if they can beat Kentucky, then, you know, really they could beat anybody in the conference. But they're carrying the albatross of a 10-game losing streak into that tournament around their necks, and tough year right there. And Insull's a good coach, there's no doubt. His first two seasons in Oxford proved that. Just a very, very tough year, and it'll be interesting to see how his program rebounds from this season moving ahead. Well, guys, the other big thing going on tomorrow regarding Ole Miss athletics is as part of spring football practice. We're able to practice around 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Remember, all practices this year are inside the Manning Center. There is no outside football field on the Ole Miss campus right now, I guess, other than the intramural fields. And I don't think Hugh Freeze wants to move his squad down to that potholed pasture. No slight right there. Somebody's going to get mad I said that. The Ole Miss has fine intramural fields. Let me, but not SEC, not the kind you want to put SEC athletes on practicing. But I'm going to get in trouble for that one. Nevertheless, though, the Rebels indoors inside the Manning Center, 4 o'clock tomorrow. We'll get our first viewing Thursday afternoon at 4. That practice open to the media. As far as we know right now, no practices are scheduled to be open to the public. And as far as we know, I was told back in December they'd try to work something out so the fans could see the Rebel scrimmage this year. But unless they move that scrimmage off campus, I don't know if that's possible, because there's no way you could fit everyone interested inside the Manning Center to watch the scrimmage. But should be a lot of fun, a lot of new faces, 8 new early enrollees. Everybody's itching to see Shea Patterson throw to some SEC receivers against an SEC secondary. We'll get a look at that over the course of the spring. And that number 2 quarterback position should be interesting. And I wrote a piece this morning about 5 we'll be watching this spring. It's up on the front page of Rebels 247 right now. I led off with Jason Pellerin. There just seems to be, Dave, a mindset amongst a lot of people in the Ole Miss fan base that Pellerin's just not going to play quarterback at Ole Miss. He's a big old boy, 6'4", he's 230. Let's move him to tight end. Let's put him at outside linebacker. Let's get his athleticism on the field. Ole Miss can't do that right now. They only have 3 scholarship quarterbacks on the entire roster, being Chad Kelly, Jason Pellerin, and Shea Patterson. So, you're not going to move Jason Pellerin anytime soon to another position until you get some more arms on campus, even if you were to do it then. But I'm a believer in Jason Pellerin. I have been since the day that he committed to Ole Miss, and I think the kid is more than capable of playing quarterback in the SEC and being an impact player inside the SEC. And, of course, he kind of gets washed away in the fact that you've got Chad Kelly as a Heisman hopeful. You've got Shea Patterson, the number 1 high school quarterback in America, and that's who he's competing with. But, my message is don't sell Jason Pellerin short. Dave, what do you think about Pellerin?
From following Pellerin's recruiting heading into Ole Miss, David, you're absolutely right. I mean, he is a 100% competitor, and he's definitely not going to go into this spring, feeling like he is it's too much of a challenge for him. He's used to the competition. And he's very used to the competition within the quarterback battle. And what I mean by that, his senior year of high school and Shea Patterson's junior year of high school, when Shea was at Calvary Baptist and Pellerin was at New Iberia, both of them competed against one another in the state championship game. So they're very used to competing against one another on the football field. They're no strangers to that. So it's going to be an interesting quarterback battle for that number 2 spot this spring.
Michael, is Chad Kelly truly a Heisman hopeful going into his senior year?
Yeah, absolutely. He needs to win big games. He needs to win, in Alabama, LSU, Georgia. And really, Ole Miss needs to win 9, 10, 11 games for him to be in that conversation. And also, he has to cut down on the interceptions. He did a great job at the end of the year, only 1 pick in his last 4 games. But he really needs to – and you feel like he settled down. And once he became – had more running plays that he was designed runs for him, that sort of opened up the field for him a little bit more and took a man out of coverage there. And so he needs, if he can play like those last 4 games of last season, how he played against Arkansas, how he played against Mississippi State, how he played against Oklahoma State, if he can play like that, then Ole Miss is going to be very successful, and postseason accolades, nominations, wins will all go Chad Kelly's way.
And, of course, the 2016 season starts for the Rebels in Orlando, Florida. Chad Kelly – Given the nation's biggest stage on that particular Monday night, it's Labor Day night against Florida State. It'll be a top 15 battle between the Rebels and the Seminoles. And that was, if you needed a platform to kick off a Heisman campaign in earnest, I suppose, Dave, that's probably better than anything.
You're right. I mean, that would be that's a marquee matchup right there, like you said, to really put your name in that Heisman conversation. I think, you know, Michael made a good point. Kelly, you know, does need to calm down on the turnovers, and which he proved that at the end of the season. He just needs to maintain that consistency of what he did at the end of the season. Minus the interceptions, Kelly had the numbers to really be in, you know, a Heisman campaign run last year. I think it was just more, you know, at the beginning of the season, there national media perception, you know, of Ole Miss was concern at quarterback. There was no proof of Kelly, you know, heading into week one of the season, and now he's proven himself. And instead of going up against UT Martin, you know, and putting up, you know, 400 yards on UT Martin, he has a chance to put up, you know, 200-400 yards, limit interceptions against one of the top teams in the country.
You know, Chad Kelly, a late addition to Ole Miss's 2015 signing class. You know, and you just you'd love to have been a fly on the wall in conversations between Hugh Freeze and Dan Werner when they were deciding whether or not they were going to bring Kelly in. At the time, you had Ryan Buchanan, Devontae Kinsley, both here, both holding out hope that they would be the guy. One of them would be the guy following the departure of Bo Wallace. And, you know, I always went back to the idea that that you and Dan would have never brought in a JUCO quarterback to kind of upset the apple cart, and they had very much confidence that Buchanan or Kincaid, either one, would be ready to assume the post-Bo Wallace mantle. Michael, are you surprised? Were you surprised at how Chad Kelly worked out? Because it really couldn't have worked out any better for him. He had perhaps a troubled off-the-field pass. That was something that was made a big deal about when Freeze decided he was going to sign Chad Kelly. And, of course, Chad didn't do anything to help that in that December incident in that outside the Buffalo nightclub. But when he got to Oxford, he really turned golden. Everything Chad Kelly touched turned to gold. No trouble whatsoever. Everything you could ask for on the field. Definitely a consummate leader. Are you surprised that it worked out that well, bringing in the JUCO quarterback like that?
Yeah, I really was. The talent appeared to be imminent with Chad Kelly with when he was coming out of high school. But, you know, he didn't win that job in Clemson. And, you know, that did not go well on his way out the door. But then he soars in junior college and seemed to mature, and that mature both on and off the field. And I still think that that Freeze and Werner, they would not have brought in Kelly if there was high levels of confidence in the quarterbacks that were on the roster at the time. And I honestly, and this is not meant to be a shot at Kincaid or Buchanan, as both are both high character guys. But if Ole Miss would have decided, you know, to go against signing a Chad Kelly and rolled with either Kincaid or Buchanan, I think we'd be looking at, you know, defending Liberty Bowl champions rather than defending Sugar Bowl champions. Because, and Chad Kelly made that offense go, and he made some unbelievable plays that I don't think any other quarterback on the roster was capable of making. And just how he played at Alabama, if you look at that performance, that was unbelievable. And how he goes even in the losses. You can't really peg Florida on him. He really had no time to do anything in that game. Memphis wasn't his best start, but that – that Arkansas game, he may have had his best game of the season. And so, you know, with the way Chad Kelly performed, I did not see that sort of success coming. But it kind of showed you, you know, where Ole Miss thought it was with the quarterback position going into that season. But, you know, now you can't be in a better spot at quarterback with Chad Kelly, who's a senior returning, and then you have the top quarterback coming in Shea Patterson, who's you know, very, very developed as far as his football IQ and acumen, as well as how he makes his reads down the field and has all the physical tools you need. And then, of course, you have Jason Pellerin, who is in sort of a rough spot. He's certainly capable of a lot on the field and has everything you really need, except, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. There's Steve Young had Joe Montana in front of him for, I believe, 4 years. Aaron Rodgers had Brett Favre in front of him for those few years. That, yes, it's sort of they have a lot of riches. We'll say it that way. But I'm excited to see what Kelly does in year two under Freeze and Warner, especially with how he concluded last season.
You know, and of course, he won't have Laquan Treadwell or Cody Core to throw to. And Cody Core showing really just kind of maybe how undervalued he was with his speed that he showed off at the NFL Combine, 7th fastest time turned in over the weekend up there. Those two guys are gone, but certainly, Dave, a capable core of wide receivers remain. And some guys who are perhaps on the verge of becoming household names themselves. I'm anxious to see DeMarcus Lodge in-game action. I think Lodge, the way he high points of football, and we talked about this yesterday, is going to be a lethal red zone weapon. But the wide receiver core Kelly has to work with, Dave, is pretty darn good. It's still amongst the best in the nation.
You're right, and I'll agree with you. DeMarcus Lodge, he is going to be that prospect to it's going to be interesting to watch, you know, him this spring, because you did see a lot of action from him last season, and that's just a testimony, as we've mentioned, to the depth of the wide receiver core. He caught, you know, one pass that it resulted in a touchdown the opening game of the season, and then, you know, he spent the remaining eight games. He played in eight games this season on special teams, so it'll be interesting to see, will he emerge as one of those elite receivers that you know, fulfills that spot and can come in and potentially fill the shoes of a loss of a Treadwell. He definitely has the potential and the talent to do that. And then you look at Damari Stringfellow, who you know, last spring it was noted that you know, he was troubling with the consistency, and then he made a complete turnaround in the ball and turned out to be one of the top receivers for the Rebels last year. And then you're returning Quincy Adeboyjo, Markell Pack. Those are two guys that are versatile, that could Adeboyjo can be a guy that could fill you in the slot need or be a very talented wideout. And then you also have Van Jefferson, who was a part of that 2015 class that was a highly rated wide receiver. And with the wide receiver core just so deep with depth, it almost seems like with that redshirt, he was almost a little bit lost in the mix. But I believe you're going to hear Jefferson's name a lot this spring. He definitely has the potential for that. He showed a lot of promise last fall. He's a polished route runner. He's very well known for his route running skills. He's definitely highly talented and can play really good for the Rebels in the slot.
All right, Dave, you guys are having an election over there in Alabama today. Have you gone to pull the lever yet?
I have not yet. It's raining over here completely, but I'll be getting out of the house shortly and probably stop by
and cast his vote for Bernie Sanders, will Dave?
I don't know about Sanders. It may be Trump. Sanders, he lost me a couple weeks ago when he didn't know the difference between nouns and adjectives. That just kind of caught me a little bit off guard there. So.
Well, that's just semantics. There are things Donald Trump doesn't know, I'm sure. anyway, we've got all that to look forward to tonight. The Super Tuesday elections, I think 12 states are voting across the U.S. today in their primaries, and you can listen to the pundits talk all night about what happened today. And, you know, the funny thing to me is the thing I'm most looking forward to tonight, and I've always watched Fox News. That's kind of been my channel of choice. The thing I'm looking forward to tonight is the Republican establishment pundit that Fox will bring on. And even if Donald Trump has a tremendous day today, how they're going to tell you that Trump's not going to be the candidate. They come up with a new way after every new poll in which he rises in. And I don't know. It just gets to the point where I think there are too many pundits on TV and not enough news people that just tell you what's going on and the way it is. Everybody wants to tell you how to think about it and what you should think about it and what you should do. And the thing I can't figure out is all of these Republican experts on the Fox News channel, they're the last ones in America to figure out that the voting populace is done with the Republican establishment. And unless they're just trying to sell you a line of goods, then I think that's what they're doing. So I know Michael's set for tonight. He's got his nachos and all that stuff ready to go. And you're not going to leave the country with Beyonce if Trump wins, are you?
Oh, I mean, it still just blows my mind how much support Trump has, because he contradicts every single thing he says. He says, you know, I really hate Hillary Clinton. She has no idea what she's doing. And then meanwhile, 3 years ago, you know, Hillary is one of the sharpest people we have in Washington. And he contradicts himself, and he is the worst speaker ever. He gets up to do his speech and just says, you know, I build great walls. No one builds walls quite like I do. I'm the best builder. He said, if he doesn't say best or huge, he's just out of words to him. He needs a thesaurus more than anything.
Shouldn't the Republican Party have realized 2 years ago when the voters in America kicked all the Democrats out of office that they wanted change in Washington? That they were tired of the same old, same old. And the Republicans have had control of both houses of Congress now for 2 years, and there's been absolutely nothing accomplished, nothing at all. And they failed to read or feel the vibe, I think, of the of some of the voter segments in America, and boy, are they feeling it now. And then they went into a state of deniability. Well, Trump's just running for a show. He won't be around long. Well, eventually, you know, Trump will get surpassed by the establishment candidates. You know, and now they're like waking up to a nightmare of it's too late. There's nothing they can do. And they, you know, and I dare them, if he's a few delegates short of having the nomination secured before the convention, if they go into that convention and turn it into a contested convention to try to put, say, a Marco Rubio up as a Republican candidate, when Donald Trump will probably have 10 times the amount of delegates that Rubio will have, I have no idea what's going to happen. This country is going to go crazy.
Something that really helps me sleep at night is that I've been very vocal about how I do not support Trump or Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton. What helps me sleep at night is the fact that they're not going to get anything done once they get in office. There will be so much opposition to, obviously, Trump's not going to get his wall, and he's certainly not going to get Mexico to pay for it. That is the dumbest thing I have ever heard in my life, that he would get Mexico to pay for it just because he thinks he's so good at negotiating. Bernie Sanders, nothing he says makes any sense in regards to any of his fiscal plans. None of that's going to go through. And Hillary is so despised by so many people in Washington that she's not going to get support for the things she wants to get done. So the fact that, you know, it'll just be 4 years of stalemate, if you get any of those three in office. That sort of helps me, although I do think Donald Trump would set the record for most amount of executive orders in the history of this country, which is a little terrifying. But I think that's sort of the positive side of all of our horrible candidates, is that they won't really get the support for either their crazy ideas or their really unlikable personalities.
A friend of mine happened to be inside the Peabody Hotel Saturday night for the annual gin show that they have up there. A lot of farmers and people in the ag community are at this thing, and they have a big convention up in Memphis every year. And Hillary Clinton, of course, was in Memphis, and the Peabody was where she was staying. And he sent me a video clip he took of Hillary walking through the lobby of the Peabody. And the amount of booze that you could hear in the crowd was equivalent to when Mississippi State runs through the tunnel at Vaught Hemingway Stadium. And then a chant breaks out in 2016. And all the while, she's smiling and waving and walking through the lobby of the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, but not a warm greeting for Hillary. I'm wondering if she changed hotels after that. But we'll see what happens. It makes for interesting television on a Tuesday night when Ole Miss, excuse me, is not playing in anything. So we'll see what goes on there. But Michael, not a Trump supporter. Dave, I think, is a Trump supporter. He's just not quite ready to jump off the ledge and tell you that. And then I'm smart enough to say I'm not going to tell you who I'm supporting if you can't figure it out by now. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But do go out and vote if you're listening in one of the Super Tuesday states. Of course, Mississippi won't vote until next week. But nevertheless, make America great again, right?
America great.
That's the ugliest hat, though, I've ever seen. People are buying these hats like crazy off the internet. I would not wear that hat anywhere. It looks like something out of 1975, off the Bad News Bears in their Chico Bell-Bonds uniform, something like that. But anyway, this is the country we live in today. Thankfully, most everything's good in Rebel Nation. As far as the big USA, we'll see. We'll see if these new faces in office, whoever the next commander-in-chief will be any better. Well, time for closing thoughts. I'll throw it over to Dave Bevan first, and Dave, hand it off to Mike.
Well, I would have to admit, David, you know, the Make America Great Again hats, they are pretty horrific. You would expect maybe like an American flag design, but you know, it's just plain Jane, and like you said, it reminds you of something rolled right out of the 1970s. But, it just came pouring down rain over here, so it looks like it's kind of drying up a little bit outside, so I'll be heading out real soon. My son just started a baseball season. It will be his first year. Now, this is my 7-year-old son, Jacob, that I'm talking about. It'll be his first year of coach pitch, so pretty excited about that as a dad, you know, to be out there. He's played all three major sports already, football, basketball, now going to be playing some baseball. But thankful Michael is okay. You know, when he sent me the text message that he was putting out some small fires, I thought, you know, he was talking about talking to someone. I didn't know he meant literally. So Michael has experienced, you know, some lions and now some fires over the past couple of days. And Michael, my good friend, I'm just glad you're okay and safe.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was a little alarming. I didn't even know candles were capable of exploding. That is something that, you know, they say you learn something new every day, and I guess I can check that box. I certainly learned something new today. I'm really just, I finished up Mad Men, that series I had never seen it before. I just finished it all the other day on Netflix. So if anyone on the board wants to discuss some Mad Men character development theories or has any good recommendations for some binge watching on Netflix, I'm open to suggestions. Just so long as it's not suggesting Fuller House. No Olsen twins and you lost me. I'm open to any and all Netflix suggestions on there.
Well, if you definitely haven't seen Better Call Saul, Breaking Bad, those are available on Netflix. I highly recommend those.
That was something that I heard in the press box the other day. I was gauging some recommendations they said
Breaking Bad was something to start.
Now, if you do watch them, I highly advise you. It won't make sense if you do. You have to watch Breaking Bad first, then watch Better Call Saul, which Better Call Saul is still ongoing. But Breaking Bad, I think it's 5 seasons, so it shouldn't take you too long to.
Perfect. I can get on board with that.
Well, I guess I can be honest. I've eaten 2 corn dogs, a burrito, and drank a Diet Coke during this podcast. And we'll just call that lunch hour. But, for me, I'm looking forward to the start of spring practice. Never can get enough football. And, it's great to be able to cover a football team that's coming off a Sugar Bowl championship with so much potential for this 2016 season. It wasn't that long ago when covering spring practice kind of brought a little tear to your eye, to be honest with you. And then Hugh Freeze shows up. And then he makes you cry full blast because the first spring Hugh was here, he was holding 5 a.m. practices, guys, outside, 5 o'clock in the morning. I remember it very well, setting my alarm for 4 o'clock so I could be on the practice field at 5. I think Freeze was just sending a message to his newly inherited players, and obviously that worked. No 5 a.m.s this year, at least we're hoping not. We don't know of any as of right now. Well, that's going to do it for us in today's Rebel Rise Live podcast. And, if you hang on to the end of every one of these, it gets awful silly as we wind things down. Hopefully we brought a little sunshine to your day. You certainly bring it to ours. We appreciate all of you for being a part of Rebels 247. For Dave Bevan, Michael Quirk, and 247 Sports, I'm David Johnson. As always, hotty totty.